Okay, I'll call the meeting to order. Before, good morning, and welcome to the meeting of Compliance, Audit, Risk Management, and Legal Affairs Committee, fondly referred to as the COW Committee. I think that came from Jerry Blakemore. Before I ask for the roll call, I would like to introduce Julie Edwards, our new administrative secretary to this committee. And Julie has more than 16 years experience of NIU, is a proud Husky, and the mother of two NIU graduates, Christopher Edwards and Crystal Edwards. Julie currently serves NIU as an office support specialist. A fun fact about her is that during her tenure, she has assisted four different head football coaches and was originally hired by Coach Novak. That really gives her quite a resume. Her experience will certainly prove helpful in her new responsibilities in the Office of General Counsel. So, Ms. Edwards, will you please do the roll call?
Trustee Wheeler Coleman.
Here.
Trustee Anthony Iosco. Trustee Robert Marshall.
Here.
Trustee Sherilyn Muir.
Here.
Trustee Mark Strauss.
Here.
Student Trustee Paul Julian.
Here.
Board Chair John Butler.
Here.
Committee Chair Robert Boy.
Here, thank you. Mr. Brady, do we have a quorum and appropriate notices?
Mr. Chair, it appears we have quorum and appropriate notices were provided by the university.
Okay. Trustees, may I have a motion to approve the proposed agenda?
So moved.
Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Let me take a moment and offer my remarks as the COW Committee Chair. Let me begin by thanking each of you for attending this meeting, and I would now like to recognize the various leaders of the university constituent groups. Dr. Bill Pitney, Executive Secretary, University Council. Bill, good morning. It is still morning, thank you. Ms. Deborah Hellitzer, President, SPS Council.
Good morning.
Good morning. Dr. Gregory Wash, Faculty Representative to the COW Committee. Not here, okay. Jay Montero, President, Operating Staff Council. Jay, thank you. Good to see you again. We're especially pleased that you're with us, and today, are there any remarks that you would like to share with us?
Yes. On behalf of my colleagues, I would like to talk about one of the things that occupies all faculty and staff at this time of year, and that is compliance with all regulations and laws. I am proud to say that NIU faculty and staff take ethics very seriously. We are currently in the midst of ethics training, and as of this morning, 80% of our employees have completed it with 1 week to go before the deadline. Most of the trustees have also presented their certificates, and so really, this is a time of year when all of us talk about real ethics in our actions at the university, in our actions as professionals. So things are going well with us with ethics training.
Bill, any comments?
Not at this time.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. I am reminded by legal here that I missed the approval of minutes of August 28, 2014. So may I have a motion, trustees, to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Today represents the first meeting of the COW Committee for 2014-2015 Board of Trustees calendar year. The committee has been in existence for approximately a year. In the past year, we have been briefed on a number of issues of significance to the committee's charge, including a Title IX presentation by Karen Baker, an insurance presentation by Sarah Cliff, an athletics compliance presentation by Athletic Director Sean Frazier and his compliance staff. The committee has followed a practice of at least a substantive discussion on one of the four areas within the jurisdiction of the committee and at least quick updates in one or more of the other areas. As chair, I propose that we expand upon this practice by continuing our substantive discussion in a particular area, but also develop a work plan for the year which may include goals, benchmarks, and reports as appropriate. Agenda item 9 will provide an opportunity for the committee to express their thoughts on this matter, and I welcome and look forward to the committee's discussion. Before this discussion ensues, I have asked our internal auditor, Danielle Schultz, to provide us the annual internal auditor's report. This report is required by state law and discussion affords us the opportunity to meet the state compliance requirement. However, we have other forums to discuss the details of any particular audit which we may do in either closed session or by one-on-one meetings with the auditor. I encourage members to avail themselves of these opportunities, and I encourage members to maintain the confidentiality or details of any particular audit by not, in this public session, inquiring about the details of any one of the particular audit. Our internal auditor is now sending to each of the committee members the internal audit, and she and the general counsel will make themselves available to discuss the details upon request. Ms. Schultz, internal audit presentation, would you please come forward and do that? You are there. Thank you. Yes,
thank you.
You're quick.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, trustees, thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. As the chair mentioned, sometimes I'm referred to as the internal auditor, and I just wanted to point out that it really does take a whole staff of professionals to do the audit work that we need to accomplish at the university. And that is the first, sorry. It's not advancing. You want to? And go ahead and pull that up. The first slide of my presentation shows the staff of professionals that we have in our internal audit office. I'd like to point out at the bottom of our slide, it shows that we have one position that is currently vacant, and we're in the process of trying to fill that. Also, I wanted to clarify a few of the certifications that are listed on the screen. All of our staff currently are CIAs, which is a certified internal auditor. Three quarters of the staff currently is CPAs, which is certified public accountants. And a CISA stands for Certified Information Systems Auditor. I'd like to publicly thank my staff for their hard work. This last fiscal year was particularly challenging for me on a personal basis, and they did a fabulous job carrying on the work of our department while I was absent off and on during the spring. The next slide, please, shows the department mission, and I won't take the time to read it to you because you have it in front of you as well, but I do want to point out that internal auditing is based on an objective assessment of the evidence. So we use a systematic and disciplined approach to evaluate and recommend improvements in the areas of risk management, internal controls, and also the governance process. As director of internal audit department, I must communicate with the Board of Trustees. One way that I communicate with the board is to meet with the chair of this committee. Another way is to present to the committee on an annual basis. We must follow the standards of the Institute of Internal Auditors. And one important requirement or standard that is required is that we remained independent. I'd like to take this opportunity to assure the board and confirm our independence from university operational duties. And that allows us to preserve the independence of our entire department. Please, another form of communication that I present to the board is this annual update. So at this time, I want to go to the next slide, which is an overview of our fiscal year 14 activities. I'd like to remind you, as the chair did, that I will be providing a high-level overview of our activities and not getting into details at this time. One exciting development that we had in our department this last year was implementation of a software application, which provides our department with automated work papers and also a tool to facilitate our departmental activities. I'm happy to report that we have moved beyond the learning curve, and we hope to continue to improve our efficiencies as we gain experience using this tool. Our audit plan for FY14 began with 21 audits. Two of those audits were moved to fiscal year 15 and are in the final stages at this time. A total of 19 audits were conducted during FY14. And if we go to the next screen, it'll give you a depiction of where what topical areas those audits fell under. We had one operational audit, 6 compliance audits, 1 financial audit, 10 fraud detection and prevention audits, and 1 information systems audit. Again, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address the committee.
Any questions for Danielle? Thank you. Before I continue, yes. Oh, excuse me.
I look right.
Between you and the other Bob, I guess we have one complete person.
Yes. You can answer that, Bob Marco, wherever you are. We'll get him afterwards.
A couple of quick questions. First, with regard to the dissemination of the audit results, I can only observe over the last year there were a couple of times where until I asked for them, I didn't get them. It's not that we weren't able to receive the reports. And I'd like to make a renewed request that we take a look at the process that gets those reports as they're issued to us. I only personally care about them after they've been issued, but if we could take a look at that, I would appreciate it. And then the second thing is, without talking about any of the particular assignments, at some point there will be a plan of work for what's done by internal audit for the next year. And I would like for us to focus on the fraud detection and prevention area. Again, it's just my personal viewpoint, and I know that largely this will be worked out between the president and the internal audit department.
Okay. Can I? I'll just comment on both of those. First, we have been discussing, and I met with Chair Boy to discuss our plans, and I think it's later in the agenda, our upcoming plans of action for the Carl Committee, and that is exactly one of them. And we've discussed providing that I would be able to establish a report that would go to the board so that you can see what has happened in the previous month, and I would do that on a monthly basis, and then as requested, I will provide audit copies of audit reports when they're requested, just to I'm not sure everyone will want them, and we want to make sure that we have a lot of because of the protection that from FOIA, we want to make sure that we keep them only disseminate them as requested. So absolutely, Mark, I can make sure that we get that to you, and we're working on the report to give you on a monthly basis from my office. On the second question or comment, we do an extensive evaluation, a risk analysis, meet with the cabinet members and determine what we'll do during the next year. Statutorily, the president has to approve my audit plan before June 30. So that has already been established and approved, and it's something that Chair Boy and I discussed providing that audit plan to you all so that you can see what we're planning in the future instead of getting, after the fact vision of that. And with regard to the fraud detection and prevention, these are audits that include we have a lot that fall into that category that have a lot of cash handling operations. And so that is something that the board back in 2000 approved guidelines that we would look at things. So any area on campus that takes in money, takes in between $50,000 and $100,000 a year would be on our 5-year plan. So we'd look at them once every 5 years. If they take in between $100,000 and $250,000, they fall into our once every 3-year cycle. And then any operation that takes in more than $250,000 in cash per year is looked at on an annual basis. And we have about 5 or 6 of those that consistently fall at that higher level. So, and those can fluctuate. And every year I do an analysis and some queries from our system to see where we're at and what departments or what operations fall in those categories. Does that help provide more information?
Yep.
I would just add this, that Danielle and I have had several long meetings, and it's my position that committee members here, whoever wants information, are welcome to it. So please make Danielle will be available to all of you, of course. So feel free to ask the questions. Thank you for all the help. I'd like to now come back to ask Greg Brady. I seem to be skipping things around this morning. Mr. Brady, any requests on public comments?
Mr. Chair, I have received no requests.
I'm glad. Thank you. All right, let's get to the two quick call updates that we have. And Danielle, you have sat down already, but thank you for an excellent and informative report. Appreciate the work that you and your staff do in the important area of compliance on a daily basis. So thank you. The status of cyber risk coverage and a brief report of the university's efforts related to the Jean Cleary Disclosure of Campus Security Policy and Crimes Statistics Act. Let me first call on Sarah Cliff. Sarah?
Good morning, Chair, trustee members. I'm going to talk real briefly about what risk management has done since we met you in August. We did renew our foreign package, our educators legal, and our excess general liability policies. In September, we worked on with procurement legal and facilities on trying to determine when to require certificates of insurance from vendors without stopping the process of procurement. We are working on the transfer of the management of claims within the self-insurance fund from legal to risk management, and a consultant for our insurance company toured the main campus looking for fire-related conditions. We have not received her report yet. In October, we met one-on-one with our brokers to identify issues that are of particular importance to Northern. Some of those things were ERM, natural disaster coverage under our foreign package, and a program called Campus Connections, which will provide coverage and policies, one-time events for third parties who are using university facilities. We just received within the last 2 days the materials for our property renewal, which will be due February 16th through the 2015 to 2016 year. We have received, with regard to cyber risk liability, a quote from Beasley Financial. With three coverage options, we are expecting quotes from two other insurance carriers, hopefully within the next couple of days. And generally, the cyber policy would respond for the dissemination of social security numbers, health information, credit card numbers that are released to the public as a result of cyber attacks, maybe a stolen computer or an inadvertently left personal data system like a computer or a cell phone. It provides, the policy that's been quoted provides credit monitoring for in the event that there's a dissemination, defense costs, forensic costs, business interruption if the university loses income as a result of the dissemination, and some public relations to manage the aftermath. So that's the update of risk management and cyber risk.
Thank you. Questions for Sarah? Anybody? Yes.
In terms of the policy for cyber attacks, what's the coverage amount?
There are three quoted coverage amounts, $1 million, $3 million, and $5 million. But all three carry a $100,000 retention amount.
And are we leaning towards any particular dollar amount or?
That I don't know yet. I've been working on the submission of the application and the quotes with ITS, and we would like to see what the other two insurance companies come in with as well.
Good enough.
Okay, I'm now looking to my left. You okay? All right, thank you. All right, Chief Tom Phillips is going to be here, and he is here. I know, Tom, welcome to the committee meeting, and you're going to give us the Jean Cleary Act report update.
Good morning. What I'm going to cover is a brief overview of the Cleary statistics and the annual security report and how we came about to successful teamwork in compiling the report this year. I'd like to publicly thank the Office of General Counsel and Student Affairs for your collaboration on this project. And we're doing some new and exciting things this year that I wanted to highlight this morning. So I got to figure this out, though. What is the Cleary Act? The Cleary Act came about in 1986 with the sexual assault of Jeanne Cleary in a residence hall. And it's a federal mandate that says that universities have to collect crime statistics in accordance with the Uniform Crime Reporting and report them annually. That is the federal statute that articulates what I just said. So the requirements, we have to publish an annual security report by October 1st of each year, which we did succeed in doing this year. We have to maintain a public crime log, which we do. I was able to tweak that and refine that to match our compliance standards this year, so that's maintained on the public safety website. And we have to disclose our crime statistics for each incident that occurs within our defined geography, and that goes beyond the campus boundaries. Some other requirements. We also have to report on crimes in 7 major categories: homicide, sex offenses, robbery, aggravated assault, burglary, motor vehicle theft, and arson. We also have to disclose statistics on the following categories for arrest or student conduct referrals: on liquor law violations, drug violations, and illegal weapons possession. We're also required to issue timely warnings in accordance with the Cleary Act crimes. The university is also required to compile and publish an annual fire safety report. We were successful in doing that, and that's part of the annual security report. Enact policies and procedures to handle reports of missing students. And the summary of those policies are inside of the security report. As everyone knows, the Violence Against Women Act was enacted this year, and as part of the President's task force, we collaborated on that, and this year was the first year that we reported on domestic violence, dating violence, and stalking in the annual security report, and I'll have those statistics for you shortly. This is a brief overview of the statistics this year. I know that's probably difficult to follow, but it's broken down. 2012-2013 comparison for on-campus crimes, non-campus public property, and residential facilities. And that's the categories that I had mentioned previously in the presentation. So the highlighted areas in yellow, you'll see slight differences, and I'm going to refer to that in the next few slides. So in 2012, we had a significant increase in burglaries on campus. Several of these burglaries occurred in one residence hall and were attributed to one offender. However, we had to count each instance of that burglary as a statistic, so it was an increase in numbers. It looked like we had a rash of burglaries that spanned the year, but it was actually one burglar and one series of burglaries. So there was a significant decrease this year because of that. That was reported in 2012. We had a significant increase in alcohol arrests in 2013. As part of our co-policing agreement with DeKalb, our officers began issuing municipal ordinances off campus for violations of underage drinking and things along those lines for mostly non-students off campus that we would encounter that we couldn't refer to student conduct. We're now issuing municipal ordinances, and because it's defined in our Cleary geography, we have to report those statistics. Significant increase in alcohol arrests in 2013. Also, we proactively are making many more referrals to student conduct. So just taking a proactive measure to that, not so much from the arrest perspective, but from the referral and the preventive and education perspective. So we're increasing our efforts in those areas. So some of the things I've done this year to improve Cleary reporting within public safety is I created a Cleary team. Historically, public safety has had one individual that has worked with general counsel, and I just felt like we needed more eyes on those numbers. So I developed a Cleary team with my staff. I'm sending 2 additional members to the Stafford Cleary training, and we meet quarterly to go over the stats. Actually, let me back up a little bit. I implemented CompStat statistical analysis as part of a qualitative control measure in my department so we can track crime. Nearly real time, biweekly, we look at the stats that feed into Cleary, and we're using that as a proactive measure for preventive and enforcement measures. And that goes hand in hand with Cleary. So every 2 weeks, we're looking at those numbers. And then every quarter, we're codifying the numbers for the Cleary report instead of waiting till the end of the year to do that. And so by doing that in incremental meetings throughout the year, we know ahead of time instead of having to look back 9 months and figure out if it actually should go in the report. It's been received very well in the department. The officers are learning more and more about Cleary and crime reporting, and that'll also enable us to have the annual security report ready a lot sooner than we historically have, so we don't have to, at the end of the year, September, everyone's running to get the report together. We'll have it done much more promptly. Any questions?
Chief Phillips, I've got two parts of my question. One's more personal, and I'd like for you to share with the committee more of your background, because you seem to really have a real seriousness in terms of the methodologies related to reporting, and I think that's very refreshing and very important here, obviously. The other part of my question is, though, I'd like you to perhaps address what has been the impact of the conceal and carry laws in the state of Illinois, and how has that impacted our campus over the past year?
Okay. So my background, for those of you that I have not shared my experience with, is primarily in university policing. I've spent the last 20 years prior to coming to NIU in Chicago at University of Illinois Chicago and University of Chicago. So I'm very familiar with Cleary and crime reporting. I led a detective unit, was very actively engaged in sexual assault investigations and things that feed into Cleary. So I take it personal. And I like telling the story about my son growing up on that campus and why university policing was a career choice for me. And so coming here, it's no secret that the number one issue I faced in the department in my arrival related to records and reporting. And some of the measures that I've taken over the past year, I'm in the middle right now of a comprehensive audit, internal audit of my own department, and looking at records processes, and the Cleary team is a result of that, looking at it from the paperless perspective and our servers and how we report, and from the records division, and make sure that all of our officers, not just me, have an understanding of the responsibility and accountability to accurately report and be transparent in reporting of crime on campus. I believe that we can't reduce crime unless we identify it and bring it out into the open and turn the lights on. So I'm not ashamed to say that if the numbers, the statistics are, if they increase, it's not necessarily relative to an increase in crime. I believe a lot of that has to do with transparency in reporting and actually identifying and classifying for what it is. So I do take that serious, ma'am. Thank you. And concealed carry, I think there was a lot of concern about that coming to Illinois. And one of the things that I did, I consulted with a lot of my colleagues across the country and how they were implementing, or other states that had concealed carry and how they handled that on their campuses. Some states have allowed concealed carry on campus, but most do not. So I decided, you know, after consulting with my colleagues, that the best way to handle it here was to build a room to facilitate people that do conceal carry to store their weapons before they come onto campus. I think the best approach to firearms on a campus is zero tolerance, and I think that's been reflective over the past year, and some of you have been notified of that. When someone brings a gun to campus, they're not welcome. But I do allow them a place to store those weapons, and I publicly broadcast that come to the police station. I have facilities for you to store your firearms. As far as the impact, it's really been nil, and I did expect that. A lot of times the media sensation surrounding those type of events they think that, you know, everyone is going to be carrying guns, and it's really not that measure. I don't think that while I think there has been an increase of people concealed carry, I think that, you know, as part of the training that they go through to be able to carry a firearm, it's made very clear to them that you can't carry them on a campus. We have not had a single person come to the police department and use our storage facility as of yet. And the community does understand. They do understand that if you bring a firearm to campus, you're suspect to arrest. There's a strong possibility that you'd be arrested. Even, you know, ignorance is not, you know, you know the law to carry a gun. But we've had no incidents, none. There's been no calls of people on campus with guns as far as, you know, accidental concealed carries. I've had a lot of questions. I had a student ask me a question yesterday about it, who was about to get his concealed carry, and he's actually a member of the Senate, and he said he went through the training and he understood the law, and I made it very clear to him that, you know, make sure you, if you're going to carry that thing to school, make sure you come by me and see me every morning and check it in here. So there hasn't been a negative impact. There hasn't been an increase in gun calls or anything of that nature. It's really been not that substantial, ma'am. So I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. We spent a lot of time last year on as we were getting to implement this, and the committee spent a lot of time in regards to concealed carry, but we hadn't talked about it subsequently. So I'm glad to hear it has not had a dramatic impact.
I think it was new to Illinois, and you know, with all the media sensation surrounding gun violence in Chicago, I think there was a lot of speculation mm-hmm. surrounding it, but it's really it has not impacted this community.
Fine. Thank you.
The institution potentially has a significant liability for incorrect or failure to file under the Clery Act. So I'm interested in confirming who's actually responsible for the report preparation and filing.
That's a collaborative effort between General Counsel and my office, with input from Student Affairs. So we work with Vice President Blakemore and Jim Guagliardo, and you know, in the end, we all sit down and we go over every single statistic. And when there's a consensus on the numbers, actually, it was previously Vice President Nicholas when he was the Vice President of Public Safety. This year, he passed that down to me, and I filed the numbers with Department of Education.
And not all of these numbers are internally generated. You need the cooperation of surrounding police organizations as well. Are you getting the cooperation that's required to allow you to prepare the reports?
We are getting the cooperation. And to emphasize the how comprehensive this process is, it's not just counting police reports. As a matter of fact, much of the information we received comes from our Maxient system. We receive anonymous reports, confidential reports, and for us to count it in Clery, it doesn't necessarily need to be corroborated by law enforcement. So a CSA could report that, and third party information. So if someone tells you, sir, that they were a victim of a robbery, and then you fill out an anonymous report, we count that number. So it's a snapshot of a voice of a community rather than the actual hard police report facts. But DeKalb has been very cooperative with us in multiple aspects. I have no complaints about our collaboration with DeKalb, and they've been very forthcoming with those numbers. One of the challenges that I'm facing now is I'm seeking to align our department, our records management system, the city of DeKalb, DeKalb County, and Sycamore on a specific records management system that I'm seeking for my department to get on that same software package, and it would completely automate Clery reporting for the gathering of data from the city, so we don't have to pencil the numbers from the city. So that's hopefully by the next time I present on this, I'll have that.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Phillips. I have one question just about the number comparison. So I know on campus is just on campus, or is that facilities? as far as where the students stay.
So if you, let me look at that real quick. I knew I was going to get that question this morning. Because sometimes it can be confusing. Sorry, I went the wrong way. I'm trying to back up here. There it is. So if you look at 2012 to 2013, it says on campus, 2012 to 2013, non-campus, 2012 to 2013, public property, 2012 to 2013, residential facilities. What you'll notice is that the residential facilities are on campus. So the statistics counted on campus for 20, it, what that is saying is, and this is the way that Cleary likes it reported, that out of those 10 sex offenses that were reported, 8 of them occurred in the residence halls. So that's not 10 plus 8, that's 8 of them occurred there. So on campus is self-explanatory. Non-campus is areas that within our Cleary geography. So the best way that I explain this in, to the officers in my department is Greek Row, where the fraternity house is, because we're responsible for reporting on those properties. So those are non-campus properties. But we are required to report statistics, and that's why I have our officers up there patrolling that area trying to reduce crime. Public property are like the sidewalks and streets outside of those. So whether it's on campus or on the extended jurisdiction, we also have to report the crime that happens contiguous to the campus and on the sidewalks and streets around those areas. So something the numbers won't tell you, looking at that, I'm an amateur crime analyst. I say amateur because there's people much better at math than I am. But I look at this stuff, and I look at it regularly. I'm into hotspot policing and identifying times. When does it happen, and where does it happen, and why does it happen? And when you look at these numbers, what it will not tell you is a breakdown of three categories reported to the FBI, which are crimes against persons, crimes against property, and crimes against society. A crime against person is a battery, an aggravated assault. Crime against property is a burglary, a theft. And a crimes against society are the things that don't impact another person, something like drug use. That's a crime, societal crime. So UCR, apart from Cleary, we have to report that through UCR. And if you look at these numbers, and it may look like an increase or a decrease, but overall, we're right where we were last year. There's not been a significant percentage increase in crime in our community when you break it down into those categories. So I hope that clarifies a little more about that. In those numbers.
Thank you.
Questions? You're not a trustee, but you're the president.
Hi. Chief, could you know what we do for branch campuses and other locations where we have activities?
So we're not responsible for policing. We do have investigative jurisdiction, and those campuses rely on local law enforcement to provide police services to them. And we collaborate with those agencies also to collect the crime statistics for those areas. Yeah, these are the campus proper. That's not these numbers. I apologize. I did not include those numbers because they're pretty much all zeros. It's all zeros.
One of the reasons I bring it up is that the Cleary Act requires extensive reporting. So if we were to give a seminar at the University Club in Chicago, we got to go get the crime statistics for that building that day. So it's a huge clerical activity that we have to do here, and I just note that because the chief and his staff have a big reporting burden and data collection burden from every place we are for every statistic for every day. This is giving you a picture for, you know, 99% of what's going on with the university, but there's that other stuff. A big deal.
Thank you, sir. That is true.
One follow-up comment to what the president just said, and I haven't really had the pleasure speaking with you at any great length. But, you know, I think when we talk about data collection and reporting, I think we can look at it, one can look at it as a tremendous burden and almost the demeanor of fighting the activity. It has to be done, but it's a dreaded activity. From a very brief presentation by the chief, it does not seem that way at all. And it seems that you use this data for the purposes that are intended, to learn from it. And so when you embrace data, when you embrace the process of data collection, then it really has
the underpinnings of much greater validity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what I picked up from your comments this morning, that you're instilling that culture with your staff. And that's very important to this university, that it's just not, that is not viewed as a burden, that is not viewed as something that has to be done, but rather it's something that you want to do so that you can analyze the information and also that you can communicate to different audiences what's actually happening on this campus from a safety perspective. And for NIU, safety issues is a major issue and a major perception.
I agree.
And that perception needs to be that we are an extremely safe campus. So.
I agree with that completely, ma'am.
Okay.
We're safe here.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Willa.
Thank you, Chief Phillips. I've got a comment and a question also. As it relates to, first of all, I want to commend you for putting the necessary rigor around capturing data and appropriately reporting on it. Significant amount of fine, I think it's about $35,000 per incident that we can be fined if we understate numbers.
Yes, sir.
Which in reality could be some real money, right? So that's a significant fine, and it's also against the law. So keeping us in compliance, I think, is really important, and I appreciate you and your team focusing in on this, right, and doing the necessary paperwork to track this. I do have a question around safety and our numbers in comparison to other universities.
Yes, sir.
And I have no clue if these numbers are lower than University of Illinois or Southern Illinois in comparison to our student population. But it would be nice at some point in time if we can get visibility to see how well we stack up against other universities in the state of Illinois.
That's an interesting comment, sir, because this is a discussion I have quite often with my colleagues, and not only in university policing, but this was a recent discussion I had with Chief Lowry of DeKalb. It's difficult to give an accurate snapshot of the true crime rate based off Cleary. And one of the challenges we face is the anonymous and third-party reporting. There's no way to corroborate the validity of that, so there's not a detective following up on it. We don't know if it actually occurred. It just takes you telling somebody and them telling somebody and then them telling the anonymous reporting. So it's difficult to look at that and say that's the true crime rate of DeKalb. But what I can tell you that having worked at two other universities in the city of Chicago, NIU is a safe campus. Not saying that the others aren't. If you looked at the comparative statistics of Northern Illinois University versus University of Illinois Chicago, they look very similar. You wouldn't see a tremendous difference in crimes on campus or in the extended jurisdiction because these are very narrow reporting criteria as far as the public property and stuff. You know, it's sidewalks adjacent to and contiguous. But I can tell you that I just looked at this, and I did this as a result of a concerned parent that reached out to the university and a concerned alumni that was concerned about the crime or the perception of crime at DeKalb. And I looked at the numbers, and I looked at not only the crime on campus but the crime in the community. And I took the Chicago Police District, 12th District, which is surrounding the University of Illinois at Chicago. It's relatively the same square mileage as DeKalb, relatively the same comparable populations. And I can tell you that in the past 3 years, the city of DeKalb has experienced 54 robberies. There's been 54 incidents of robberies in 3 years. That's too many, but that may seem like a lot. And that's as a comparative to a city neighborhood. And I think UIC is a safe campus. But the 12th district experienced 498 in 1 year. That's a drastic difference in communities and what we're experiencing here. So it's difficult to say that, you know, this campus versus that campus, because you have to take in the totality of the community around it, the co-policing efforts, the joint patrol, and really just the the tolerance. I before I came here, I was at the University of Chicago, which is Hyde Park and Woodlawn, and to watch the news, there's a very high crime rate in that community, and there's a lot of robberies in that community. And however, it's a vibrant community, and the people are engaged, and there's not the what I believe is the fear and the perception of crime that I experienced when I came here. I did notice that there was a heightened perception or a fear of crime here. I'm still studying that. I analyze that and trying to engage that. I think some of that may be cultural. Some of it may be, to be candid, the urbanization of DeKalb. And I'm trying to bridge that gap beyond a law enforcement perspective by building community in collaboration with Chief Lowry. For example, our recent unity walk in the community with Pastor Joe Mitchell. So I think that we can change those perceptions by just engaging the community and realize that we are safe here. Crime will never go away. We'll always have crime. We'll always need the police. But I think that by breaking down those barriers and engaging community through Camp Power and some of the other things that we've been doing, these numbers will naturally decrease, and you'll feel safer.
Enforcement officers. Bob's speaking what classification?
To the mic. Bob's speaking to the mic. We can't hear you. No, speaking to the mic.
No, I don't think it was coming through. What I wanted to ask was if we have visiting law enforcement officers.
Yes, sir.
What classification are they in? Do they check the weapons in or what?
Yes, sir. So police officers are aware that if they come to a campus, all the police in Illinois leading up to concealed carry receive training on how to engage people with concealed carry. And part of that training was that if you come to a campus, they're supposed to come to my office and check in. And they have to receive my authorization to carry on campus.
Just add that at another college that I was quite familiar with, we had a law enforcement curriculum, and there were police officers all over the campus carrying.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. And sir, I'd like to say that, I mean, I feel comfortable with that. If an officer does, when they come and they say, hey, I'm taking a class, and what I do ask is that they do not attend class in uniform and that their weapon be concealed, as not to alarm people. We do have officers on this campus that are taking classes from pretty much everywhere in DeKalb County, and I welcome that. They're my partners in keeping this campus safe.
Thank you, Chief, and thank you for a great presentation. But more important, glad you're here so that you have a chance to interact with the committee members, the Board of Trustees. I think it is a good thing to do that from time to time, not because of incidents, but because just to be in touch with the board is always a good thing to do. So we'll figure out how best to get you back here the next time around. But thank you for a great report.
Thank you, sir.
I want to take this time to commend the president, his cabinet, and staff for the work they have done and are doing in this area. The President's Task Force on Violence Against Women Act, chaired by Vice President Leslie Rake and Eric Weldy, they have devoted a great deal of time and effort to reviewing current policies and practices. And I'm certain the committee joins me in thanking the President, Chief Phillips, and the leadership of Student Affairs, Research and Innovation Partnerships, and all the other divisions for their work in this area. Thank you all. I think that any other discussions we'd like to have? I think there's one more item here on the proposed work plan for fiscal year 14 and 15. It's a discussion that can take place part of it today and ongoing in terms of preparation for what we want to do for the coming year. So, committee members, you have any thoughts on for this committee? Any particular new work plan you'd like to add, Mark?
As I want to reiterate my interest in having us pursue the development of an enterprise risk management program. I also believe that we've spent a lot of time cataloging the myriad of regulations that the university suffers under. But I think that what we need to do is to get to an action plan where we have people that are
personally, that are identifiable and are responsible for fulfilling the responsibilities that we have under these regulations, and then finding a way to be able to systematically follow up on them, resulting in a kind of scorecard so that we have the ability as a committee to be able to monitor whether or not our responsibilities are being fulfilled under all of those regulations. I think that ought to be a hallmark of what this committee does, and I hope that we can quickly get to that result.
I think that's a good idea. And how about between you and Jerry and I and Greg, we schedule a time where we can talk a little bit more before we have another committee meeting.
Yeah, I'd be happy to participate in that effort.
Good. Thank you. Anybody else? Willa?
So the only thing that I'd like to get additional visibility on is the training that we have in place for compliance and following rules within the university. It would be nice to get visibility to what those training programs consist of, as well as what's mandated versus what's volunteered or additional training, and then the compliance. How many people are not taking training when they should be, and that kind of stuff.
We'll work on that as well. Anybody else? All right. I think that the next meeting date we have is a tentative meeting date we have is February 26, 2015, which is the same date, I hope, for all the other committee meetings. So thank you for coming all. We're going to motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you all. Have a good day.